The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
80 as well. Cowboys fans, told you I had questions about Mike McCarthy. 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. Raj, I hope to create some mojo moments on this show. Mike McCarthy played the Austin Powers on Hard Knocks. He played the team Austin Powers. Head coach Mike McCarthy said, we're going to create mojo moments. And it seemed like Hard Knocks was trying to present this idea that, like, the team was buying in. But it's hard for me to believe that the team bought in for that and then created mojo moments. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests, join me on the Goodyear Hotline. First, it's time for some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. How about them Cowboys? Who was the star of Hard Knocks? No, there was some interesting stuff, actually. Let me say, Hard Knocks is a great show. The Cowboys are a great subject. There was new and interesting or interesting information about relationships on the team and all that stuff that came out of Hard Knocks, and a big thing happened. And yet, maybe it was because it was past my bedtime, I found it hard to keep my eyes open. Rog, you're a Cowboys fan. Were you compelled by Hard Knocks last night?
Oh, this is the third time on there, Max. I've seen it before. It's all the same. No, I was not compelled, but I was a little disappointed. Can I not be compelled and still be disappointed?
Yeah. Well, I'd say if you're not compelled, you would be disappointed. What were you disappointed by as a Cowboys
fan? I'm disappointed in our team.
Well, I told you, you're either going 8-9 or 9-8. I think you can see what I'm talking about now. Now, here's the thing. Like, somehow the whole was less than the sum of its parts. And Hard Knocks, again, is a great show. I'm being, you know, maybe overly critical here. But think about what happened. Mike McCarthy, Jerry Jones, Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, and Micah Parsons. By the way, I always mispronounce someone's name for the first, like, 5 years of their career. I was calling him Evander Holyfield every time. Wait, Terrell or Terrell? Wait, which one is it now? And for who does it apply? For whom does it apply? Right? So in my mind, every time I say his name, I'm like, wait, Micah or Micah? I have to hear it 1,000 times. And still, I mean, this is like my father, when Ronald Reagan was president, used to call him Ronald Reagan. I say, Dad, his name is Madison Square Garden. Dad, it's Madison Square Garden. Well, that's the way we used to say it. And I have that disease of the brain somehow when it comes to names. First, I can't remember them, and then I can't pronounce them. At any rate, so you have all these interesting characters, and stuff is happening, and yet I found it less compelling than some Hard Knocks. Look, let's start with who the star of the show was. It was Jerry Jones. From him crying at training camp, right, the presser, to start camp, and that was all over ESPN a couple weeks ago. We'd seen it before, but still. From Jerry Jones salting his McGriddle or whatever that was. Dude, I couldn't tell if it was a cheeseburger or a sausage, egg, and cheese, whatever it was. Dude, I'm sure there's a lot of salt in there already. Jerry, you're not the spring chicken. What are you doing salting it? Maybe that's why he was crying at the presser. Look, none of us are promised tomorrow, and this dude could easily outlive everyone on this show, Raj. But if I'm Jerry Jones' age, and I'd like to live to see another Super Bowl, maybe I'm not salting my McGriddle or whatever that was. Maybe I'm not actually pouring salt on it. But maybe he knows he does that kind of stuff and the clock is ticking. Maybe that's why he's getting choked up. Anyway, so Jerry Jones is a star as always. And maybe that's the problem with the team. Jerry Jones is always a star. When he had another star, Jimmy Johnson, he ran him off. And there was that moment where, you know, Jerry's telling Jimmy Johnson he's going to put him in the Ring of Honor. And Jimmy's like, while I'm still alive, right? But the big stuff that happened was Mike McCarthy, head coach Mike McCarthy, counting. He had some metric, 575, right? Because they're trying to keep track of Dak's work rate coming back from a catastrophic injury. And 575 apparently is way too high a number. So they're like, let's walk that back a little bit, not work him so hard. And you see Dak champing at the bit. Oh, I want to get in there. Let me, I've been out too long. And you see Jerry asking Mike McCarthy, hey, is Dak going to get back in there? And then you find out Dak, even though they were supposed to take it back a little bit, was still maybe doing a little too much. And then he gets hurt. And he gets hurt. That's a big, giant thing to happen. And it was just, if anything, I guess it was too subtle. It was too, like, it just didn't seem to me to be, and maybe that's partly because in the last couple days, more and more, in the last week, more and more former Cowboys legends, Aikman and Michael Irvin and others are like, I'm a little bit worried about Dak's injury. And so now it's like, well, that's a big thing. Coach was like, that is too high a work rate in camp. What's the number one thing about preseason you want? To work out all the problem? Number one thing is get out without any injury. Right, that's number one. Your star quarterback, who got hurt and then signed a trillion-dollar contract, came back off a catastrophic injury, and they weren't careful enough in training camp, and he sidelined again? I don't know. It seems like a kind of a big thing to me. So that was a giant thing to happen. I thought it was also interesting. Like, Dak and Zeke seemed genuinely to be best friends. You know, BFFs, right? Like, they pumped that up, but it seemed like it was genuine. Zeke stealing Dak's bike and all that. And they came into the draft. Also, here's another thing. Like, they came into the league together. Dak is a quarterback. Zeke is a running back. Same draft. And they've been best friends since then. It would have been interesting to see a little bit, like, when they came in, Zeke was the big deal, drafted fourth overall. And Dak was a fourth rounder. But since then, so, like, Zeke was the big deal, right? But since then, things have changed. Not that Zeke's not still a big deal, but Dak is a bigger one, right? I don't know. I would have like to them to get into that. I thought it was like a missed opportunity. But then finally, Mike McCarthy with the mojo moment. My goodness. It's, you know, that's a dude really trying. He's trying to push some buttons. But if you're on the Cowboys and coach comes up, it's like, we're going to create mojo moments. I don't know. Darryl Moose Johnston, former Cowboys fullback, of course, on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Listen.
A complete team effort. You're going to have adversity and injuries during the course of the year. You talked about Carson Wentz and Quentin Nelson up in Indianapolis before I came on. You know, those are the things that can happen to you during the course of the season. So it takes everybody. And, you know, it has to be frustrating for Coach McCarthy. There was a lot of talented teams up there in Green Bay. And for him to only have one championship with Aaron Rodgers at the helm, you know, has to be frustrating. But again, that shows you how difficult it is. But I do like, you know, getting to the playoffs is not good enough. Winning the NFC East is not good enough. Winning the NFC is not good enough. It's all about winning a Super Bowl. So I really like the messaging. I think it's good. I think it's something that those guys need to hear. But that does not mean that is going to translate into a championship this year.
I completely agree with that, and I'm going to get into that in a second. This is the Max Kellerman Show, coming to you live from the Seaport District, Pier 17, brought to you by Chase. I completely agree with that analysis by Darryl Johnston. I completely agree with it. The speech itself about how nothing's good enough except the Super Bowl, although I think he stopped just shy of that. He's like, winning is not enough. It's about winning a world championship. He said that. He said, period, period. That's all that matters. Going to the playoffs is not enough. I'm like, all right. Then he started going backwards. Having a winning season is not good enough. Wait a minute. Shouldn't you start with the season and then go to the playoffs? Getting to the championship game, not good enough. I guess he did complete it, right? Because if you're saying getting, because I was like, wait, does he mean NFC championship or does he mean the championship? I guess that's clear enough that he means Super Bowl. You got to win the Super Bowl. I actually thought he was good there. It's the mojo moments, man. When you start going to gimmicks like that, you're taking a risk as a coach. Because that's not the kind of thing where you're just going to kind of throw stuff against the wall and see if it sticks, right? There's risk involved. You can also lose the team. They can stop taking you seriously after stuff like that, like with enough stuff like that. Like, if you're going to be that kind of coach who tries stuff like that, the only way you get your team to buy in over the long haul is if they see that whatever they understand or don't understand about what they're doing, whatever they're vibing with or not vibing with, if they see in practice and in games that you actually care about their success and that you know what you're doing, you're putting them in positions to win. If players see that in a coach, then that the stuff that misses, you can forgive. But when you start to make mistakes as a coach, if you start to have players, especially key veterans, who are like, I don't know about this. Coach doesn't seem like he actually has the answers. And you're missing with stuff like the mojo moments, it's a problem. That was Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Here's the question, Lakers fans. Is this the LeBron fans? This goes for Heat fans and Cavs fans too. Okay? And basketball fans, everybody. Lots of fans, but especially Lakers, Cavs, and Heat. And LeBron. I guess you can be a LeBron fan even if you're not a Lakers, Cavs, or Heat fan. Have I gone over the number of the kinds of fans this applies to enough yet, Raj? Very good. Now, here's the question. Ready? See, I'm pretending that I'm dying before I can give you the... No, it doesn't work? Here's the question. Is this right now in L.A., this moment, with Russell Westbrook and Anthony Davis, is this the best big three LeBron has ever played in? Is this the best one? The candidates, of course, are Bosh and Wade with the Heat, and, of course, Kyrie and Kevin Love in Cleveland. Now, he won two championships with the Heat, one in Cleveland, and now one with Anthony Davis before they even added Russell Westbrook. Remember when they were trying to say AD and Kuzma were a big three? Do you see now, everyone, the difference between a real big three and nonsense? Then it was like Kuzma, and then it was like Dennis Schroeder. No. There's a difference between a real big three and nonsense. This is a big three. Now, if you examine it closely, the Bosch Heat big three, they went in with the biggest expectations because LeBron was the best player in the game at the time, and his competition came from Kobe and Duncan, but I think he'd already taken it over by then. Well, let me put it this way. He hadn't, but we didn't know until after year one. It was still Kobe because LeBron hadn't really, like this whole cliche, he hadn't learned how to win, but you could see he hadn't in that first series against the Mavericks, that first finals against the Mavericks. And so it was still Kobe. But my perception at the time was LeBron was number one and that Dwayne Wade was top four. He was there with LeBron and Kobe and Duncan. If you could put three players ahead of Wade at the time in the NBA, those would be the only three for me. And then Bosh was a perennial all-star. You know, not just a guy who would make an all-star team once in a while. He made the all-star team every year. That was a great big three, and the expectations were not two, not three, not four. No, it was two. But the way it panned out, I would not say that Dwayne Wade was a top four player his first year with LeBron. He was something less than that. He was not quite an MVP caliber player. And Bosh was never perceived as an MVP caliber player, though he was very, very good. He's great. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame. He was underrated at the time. I used to argue all the time on LA radio, Bosh was better than Kevin Love, and no one agreed with me. No one agreed at the time. Kevin Love's putting up 25 and 12. Bosh is averaging 13 points, whatever. I'm like, do you watch the games? Bosh is critical to their success, a great two-way player. He's not worried about his stats. But still, I never argued Bosh is an MVP. No one did. So that's the Heat. Now, if you look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, you'll see that neither Kyrie Irving nor Kevin Love has ever been perceived, and it's been correct, as an MVP caliber player. Have you ever thought of Kyrie Irving is going to win the MVP this year? Kevin Love? No, certainly not. So that was the Cavs. Now let's look at the Lakers. Is LeBron still an MVP caliber player? When last seen healthy, the answer is yes. Many people argued that until he got hurt, until he started slowing down because of the injury, he should have been the MVP last year. Now, was he even better with the Heat than he is now? Yes. Was he better with the Cavs than he is now? Yes. And so LeBron's not quite the player he was, but still an MVP caliber player. Now, is AD an MVP caliber player? The answer is yes. He could have won MVP of the finals. Two finals ago. And anyway, look, he had one of the highest PERs in the history of basketball. Dude's averaging almost 30 points with well into the double-digit rebounds and blocks and everything. Yeah, every year, he performs as a five-star player. The five-star MVP caliber. Four is an all-star. Three is a starter. Two would be a rotation piece. And one would be replacement level. AD's five stars, not four, five. That's an MVP caliber player. Now, what about, and probably the best, 6'11 plus player in the game. You want to say KD? Okay, but AD is, of the rim-protecting scorers, AD is the best in the game. Like, who's he competing with? Embiid, Jokic, on a game-for-game basis, that's what he's talking. You're talking about Embiid, Jokic, and then just big, long guys like Giannis, KD. AD is in that group. Top-flight MVP candidate. Now, what about Westbrook? So that's two MVP candidates, same team. That did not happen on the Heat, as it turned out. It looked like it might, because where was Wade? He wasn't quite there anymore. And Bosh was never there, although a great player. So now the Lakers already have two of those guys. What about Westbrook? Russell Westbrook, every year, going back to the Thunder when Paul George was there and even before that a little bit, but every year, last four seasons, first half of the year, we look at Russell Westbrook and we go, he's past it. He's not as good as he was anymore. Remember, before Paul George got there, he was averaging a triple-double with 30 points. I know he's averaging it for 4 years and all, but he was averaging a triple-double with 30 points. I think it was like 31 point something, and it was like 11 something. Like, it was crazy. It's not that. Then he stopped doing the 30 points. Why? Because he's incapable of scoring it? No. Stopped averaging it because that's not what the team needed. Contrary to some, the belief of some, he's a team player. Doesn't mean he always makes perfect decisions in the best interest of the team, but he's trying to. That's all you can ask of anyone. And it seems to me. And Russell Westbrook was still, in the last four seasons, by the second half of the year when he figured out what these new teammates needed from him, an MVP-caliber player. Yes, an MVP-caliber player. You have to really go back and try and remind yourself what you thought, what was being said, how he was playing, and how his teams were winning in the second half of seasons in recent years. With the Rockets? Remember that? Didn't look so good at first. And then what happened? They made Russell Westbrook point center, kind of. Remember that point center, short point center, Russell Westbrook? He's getting you your penetration and distributing from the paint and all that stuff. It wasn't Harden running the offense. It was Westbrook. And they caught fire. With Paul George, same thing. With all the teammates in the different teams, same thing with Bradley Beal. Didn't look so good at first. Then they caught fire second half. So even if you say, well, Westbrook's not quite MVP, he ain't just all-star either. He's like a 4.5 star player at least. LeBron's never played in a situation like that where you could argue both of his teammates in the big three are MVP caliber players. That wasn't Wade and Bosh, and it certainly wasn't Kyrie and Kevin Love. Now, does that mean they need to win the championship to validate that claim? Nope. Because let me tell you something. The Mavs had a good team that year. The Spurs had great teams when they beat the Heat. But they didn't have no kind of roster like the Brooklyn Nets have right now. KD, Harden, Kyrie, and then your four and five options in the starting lineup are Blake Griffin and Joe Harris. No, there's never teams like that. Even the Golden State Warriors' offensive firepower at their very best with KD is not like this Brooklyn Nets' offensive firepower. So I would say the Lakers, this could be the best big three of LeBron's career, and they don't need to win the championship to validate that because of the existence of the Brooklyn Nets, which is an even better big three. I will say they better get there. 888-SAY-ESPN 729-3776. They better get to the finals. King from L.A., you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. King from L.A. Well, we're having a little problem with the phones, apparently. You know, King, I'm going to put you on pause because we got to get out of here in 30 seconds, and I want to let you talk. I'm going to get to the calls coming up, Raj. What do you think of that? And you can't stop me with your hard outs and your phone shenanigans, Raj. I won't let you stop. The people need to speak.
Facts.
Coming up, we're going to get to see some of these rookies on the field tomorrow. Who is under the most pressure? Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, Sirius XM Channel 80, on your smart speaker, wherever you get your podcast. How many seconds are there left in this segment now?
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
There we go. Now I have audio. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Pretty good, Raj, to get audio on the radio show, for the host to have audio. Also on Sirius XM Channel 80, 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776, The Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join me on the Goodyear Hotline. Which NFL rookie is under the most pressure in the preseason? Is it Trevor Lawrence? Zach Wilson's already like, oh, he's not looking good. A rookie quarterback on a bad team in before preseason even begins. What's wrong with Zach Wilson? Oh, you gotta love us in the sports media. Justin Fields, who's drawing raves. Trey Lance. Mac Jones. Is it someone else? The rookie under the most pressure is Trevor Lawrence. Because, and Booger McFarland and Stephen A. Smith were getting on me about this, because I said, the way I phrased it was, he's come out with more hype even than Peyton Manning. It's not about hype in terms of the amount of press. That's not exactly what I meant. What I should have said, but it's the same point, is Trevor Lawrence is the best prospect ever. Prospect. Like, in the sense that he checks every box and he does it at a very high level. He's really tall. He's really fast. He has a really good arm. It's really strong. It's really accurate. He reads defenses really quickly. He's a great athlete, by the way, through an interception year two. Remember after he won the national championship? By the way, by a much wider margin than Deshaun Watson did. He was surgical in his championship game. And he threw an interception early the next year, and he chased down the defender in the open field and tackled him. Remember Ben Roethlisberger doing that in the playoffs in Pittsburgh? And we were all like, well, even if he's not a great quarterback yet, he's a great football player. I guess the only mark against Trevor Lawrence at one point, he made some comment to the effect like, football is not, he won't be the end of the, remember that? It was some comment that fell short of, I will die if I don't do everything perfectly, and everyone lost their minds. But he explained what he meant, and it was fine. And my point on First Take today was that and is that. You look at Zach Wilson, he's also under tremendous pressure. And he was being compared to Peyton Manning by Robert Saleh, the coach of the Jets. And people are like, oh, you can't compare him to Peyton Manning. But my point is, well, okay, listen to the sound first, then I'll tell you my point.
For most rookies, especially on the offensive side, but for everyone, it's going to get worse before it gets better. It is what it is. There's just a lot of things that happen. I mean, there's a reason why being a rookie is hard in this league. There was a Hall of Famer yesterday that was inducted in that had a 71 quarterback rating his rookie year. It's not easy to play quarterback in this league as a rookie, especially quarterback. But it is going to get worse before it gets better. But he's at that point now where he's going to be able to stack up days. And we got all the utmost confidence in him and his ability to figure out mistakes and correct them and get to a better place.
Yeah, see, my point is that Zach Wilson was the second overall draft pick, and there's a lot of pressure there. But don't compare him to Peyton Manning, I would say Peyton Manning actually clearly was the greatest regular season player in the history of football. If you take out the playoffs and just take Peyton Manning regular seasons as best ever. Let's not forget, for most of their careers, he was considered way better than Tom Brady, and the reason we liked Brady more is because when it mattered most, Brady was better than Peyton, but some of that I ascribed at the time to Bill Belichick. I may have been wrong, but I'm just talking about perception at the time. Peyton Manning went first overall because he was not in the same draft as Trevor Lawrence. Remember, there was some like, who's going to go first, Peyton Manning or Ryan Leaf? If he was in the same draft as Trevor Lawrence, who had all the stuff Peyton had minus the famous name, but all the stuff that Peyton had plus speed, plus foot speed, who do you think would go first? Risk-averse teams, they'll always take the guy who checks the most boxes if he's doing it at a high level. So Zach Wilson went second in this draft just like Peyton Manning would have. And Peyton was no good his first year because, you know what, if you start your first year and you're really young and your team's not good, that's why they took you first overall, you're not going to do great. Zach Wilson's not going to have a great year because the Jets are no good. The question is not this year for Zach Wilson, as it is with Trevor Lawrence. More pressure on Trevor Lawrence. The question is long-term with Zach Wilson. And so far, early indications for Jets fans, don't worry about the results this year, are good. They had Becton at left tackle, a mountain of a man. Great young left tackle. And they draft Vera Tucker. Vera Tucker is can't miss at left guard. He could also play tackle. But the left side of the offensive line for the Jets is locked down at the highest level. Young as hell and incredibly talented and athletic. And then you have the quarterback. Left tackle, left guard, quarterback. Check, check, check. You don't have that much more to go to have an outstanding offense. So they're doing it the right way. Long term, there'll be pressure on Zach Wilson. This year, it's Trevor Lawrence. King from L.A. You're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Of course, Max. This is the best big three Bron has ever played with. He's playing with another MVP and also a potential MVP. But the main reason I say that, this is the first time on a big three where he has two guys where he can actually defer to and just sit back and be the third option, kind of be a decoy. It was only one guy when he was in Cleveland and one guy in Miami. But now you got AD and Russ where Bron could just be the third guy.
That's a very good point.
On the court.
King, that's a very good point. And I would say I'm gonna move on to Rich from New York. But I'm going to say that the Lakers, what they're missing here is shooting in the big three. Westbrook is not a shooter. LeBron's not a pure shooter, neither is AD. But in terms of overall value as a player, sometimes we can get caught up on what a guy doesn't do instead of focusing on what he does. In terms of the value of each individual piece, maybe you could argue the big three in Miami was better because LeBron was at a higher height at that point in his career, both ends of the floor. But when we say big three, I don't think we're just weighing total value. I think what we're doing is saying, is that value and how it's distributed? Is it distributed, you know, not evenly, but approximately in the same range in each guy? Like with LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love, there's a big fall off going from 1 to 2 to 3. And even by that time in Dwayne Wade's career, from LeBron to Wade to Bosh, as I said, neither Wade nor Bosh were MVP caliber players at that point in their careers. And Wade was arguably at one point, sort of. But these two guys, AD is an MVP caliber player when he's healthy. When he plays 70 games, he's in the conversation. And Westbrook in the second half of seasons is. Rich from New York.
Hi, Max. Max, Mike McCarthy is off the wall. Do you realize how hard it is to win a championship? Let me just tell you how.
Yep.
Michael Jordan, in his first year at North Carolina, won the championship. Mm-hmm. 2 years after, the year after and the year after that, he still had Perkins and he still had Worthy. They didn't even get to the Sweet 16 with those teams. And you had the greatest player with one of the greatest coaches. Couldn't get to the Sweet 16. That's how difficult it is to win a championship. And this guy is saying to his players, it's Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl or bust. Makes no sense. This guy is putting pressure on the players, and he's really talking.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, but I think that has to be your mentality. You have to think we're going for the big prize. Now, alternatively, you can say instead of Super Bowl or bust, you could say something like, what's our goal this season? We don't have goals this season. We have a goal week one, and that's to win that game. And then ask me about our goal week two. You know, like if you want to take a very process-oriented approach, that's fine. But if you are someone who's going to talk about the big picture and you're stacked on offense like the Cowboys are, I think it's okay to say, look, these are our expectations around here. Now, of course, you're not going to win the championship every year, and it's highly unlikely the Cowboys do it this year. But your reach should exceed your grasp. You know, you should try to overreach and see what you come up with, because you might mess around and win a championship. Now, I don't think the Cowboys will do it. I don't think their defense is good enough. But I don't object to a coach saying, hey, we're swinging for the fences. Andre in Massachusetts, since we got Richard, let's talk to Andre. Andre in Massachusetts.
Max, what's going on? Listen, no problem there with swinging for the fences, but Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville, they might be looking at a distance that's too far to encompass. Here's the reason why. You bring in Tim Tebow as a tight end. You want to run that experiment. All of the hoopla, all of the focus on that in and of itself, never mind Urban Meyer being a first-year college coach trying to bring in a new system. Trevor Lawrence absolutely has the most pressure because this rookie class, in terms of quarterbacks, may be one of the most talented of all time. Mac Lawrence here in New England, what Trey Lance is doing in San Francisco, he has to get out to a big start, a big lead early on. That's why he has the most pressure among all these.
Well, I think that's well argued. I'll say that Bill Barnwell had a list of teams he felt on ESPN.com had the best chance to go from worst to first, because in the NFL that can happen more readily than in the other big sports. And everyone would assume it's San Francisco. I think it's San Francisco. But I wouldn't pick them to end first, but like they could easily wind up first in the NFC West after finishing last. But he argued Jacksonville, and he made some, of course he did, Barnwell's a smart guy, and he's paying attention. He made some interesting arguments, compelling arguments about why, and I suggest you read the article, but they could find themselves in that division. Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer could find themselves in that division in the thick of a playoff race late in the season, and that will intensify the pressure. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Save when you bundle auto, home, or motorcycle insurance. Visit progressive.com. Coming up, signing Luke is great. $207 million. But I'll tell you the player the Mavs need to trade for now. Do you have a motorcycle, ATV, or even a truck that's sitting in your garage you've been waiting to sell? With RumbleOn.com, you can easily turn your unused vehicle into cash in minutes. RumbleOn.com will give you a cash offer for your vehicle and pick it up for free anytime, anywhere. Harley, Polaris, Can-Am, Yamaha, even if you're just looking to trade in. RumbleOn will pay cash no matter what the make or model. Visit RumbleOn.com today and enter promo code RADIO to get a $300 increase on your cash offer. Fast bikes, faster cash.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Also on Sirius XM Channel 80, 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. Download the Overheard podcast for curiously delightful conversations overheard around National Geographic's headquarters. Presented by the City Advantage Platinum Select Card, the card built for your next adventure. All right, so I have a star the Mavs need to trade for to pair with Luka Doncic. First, this is not my original idea. The idea is from Jordan Schultz when he came on to go over the NBA draft on First Take a couple weeks ago. But before I tell you even what it is, I want you to listen to Adrian Wojnarowski, our ESPN NBA insider extraordinaire, of course, on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin.
You look through the years with Dallas when they've had cap space, they've gone after, you know, kind of those A-list free agents at kind of different periods. They've never really landed them. And there's a lot of things that players should like about Dallas. It's a big market. You've got a committed owner. And Mark Cuban, state taxes in Dallas and Texas, you know, all of those factors, you know, that should lead players there. They've never really landed, you know, the big time A-list free agents. You would hope with Luka Doncic, when they get to a point where they might have max cap space, that he's the kind of guy that guys are going to want to play with.
We played that sound for you yesterday, and I told you yesterday that Nico Harrison, the GM, the former Nike guy, Kobe's guy, and you see the success Pelinka's had, another like sharp former Kobe guy, right, has had with the Lakers as the GM. Nico Harrison is very well liked, considered extremely smart, good relationship with players. Jason Kidd also a good relationship with players, and that'll help. I think that's smart of Mark Cuban. And Woj is right, of course. Mark Cuban's, you know, team-friendly, player-friendly owner. Now Nico Harrison and Jason Kidd in place. It's a warm weather city. It's a glamour city. And it's a tax-free state. Got everything going for it. And they've won a championship not all that long ago. They have a history, a, you know, pedigree. Now, a tradition. Now, the trade proposal that Jordan Schultz had on First Take a couple weeks ago, draft expert Jordan Schultz, was Kristaps Porzingis for Ben Simmons. And I don't see it necessarily as straight up. Maybe you have to involve a third team, whatever. And I know people would be thinking about it like, hold on. You have a point guard center. You have a, like a ball handler, big combination. Like Magic and Kareem, right? Like you have Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. That should be a generational 1-5 combination. And you have Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis. Same sort of thing. Kristaps, the original unicorn. Luka, 6'8", does everything. Ben Simmons, greatest handles ever at 6'10", does everything at historically elite levels except shoot, which he does at historically, like, the lowest level ever. But other than that one part of his game, which is very important, arguably the best defender in the NBA, a genius-level passer, laser beam passes, eyes at the, on the back of his head, you know, like what handles, like what does Ben Simmons not do incredibly well except shoot? Now, it doesn't make sense, right? Why would you put two bigs on one team, two ball handlers on the other. I'm looking at this from the Mavs' point of view. They got to move Ben Simmons. And if you and it looks like the Mavs got to move Porzingis. So even if you have to get a third or a fourth team involved, is Porzingis and maybe a little bit more, is that enough to get you Ben Simmons? It might be right now. Simmons, they can't offload him right now. And think about the way Simmons and Luka would work. You know, what's the criticism of Simmons once the playoffs start and the game slows down? It's more half court and stuff. Not as many fast breaks and stuff. Well, Simmons got to be put in the dunker spot. Because otherwise they're going to put him on the line or they're going to force him to shoot, and he can't shoot. Ideally, you build a team around Ben Simmons the way they built a team around the Greek Freak in Milwaukee. Right? You surround him with shooters. Let him, take it to the rack. If you don't double him, there's 2 points or 3 points if it's an and one. And if you do double him, I said genius-level passer, eyes in the back of his head throwing laser beams, he'll find the open man. They'll knock down a shot if you surround him with shooters. That's why you saw Simmons and Giannis, they enter the league, their efficiency numbers are similar on offense, but Giannis's keeps going up and Simmons doesn't. I don't think it's just about the shot. I think it's about the team they built around him. They didn't build one around Simmons, built one around Embiid. Now, Simmons in the dunker spot, you take the ball out of his hand, it's one of his best attributes, but Simmons in the dunker spot really works. If Luka is the primary ball handler and Simmons is your power forward, let's say, the level of basketball intelligence and passing from your two most heavily used players, I just need to see what that looks like. Not to mention Simmons is also a great defender. And the other thing is, if it's the kind of ball-sharing, quick decision team I think it would be with those two guys, it would be enticing for a third star to join them, particularly one who shoots and shoots well. And then Simmons could be the third option in terms of scoring on the team, which is really what he's best suited for. 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. We've got Chris Mortensen coming up to give us the latest from NFL camps here on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. See you in, a couple minutes? Proof?
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.